Welcome back as we bring you another edition of The Conversation with me, Alexis Nunez, and Shaka Hislop. This time, we're keeping it all in the family as our most recent ESPN family member and former Manchester City player Neda Manua joins us to talk about football's most recent efforts to combat racism in the sport and what he feels needs to be done next. Thank you guys once again for joining us in another edition of The Conversation with myself and Shaka Hislop as we continue this conversation. Absolute pleasure to have part of our now ESPN family, Neda Manua, joining us as well. Neda, thanks so much as well for joining us and being ready to, you know, talk about this. As Shaka and I always say, the whole point is to continue the conversation so that it doesn't become just something that we do in Black History Month, whether it's in the US or just the UK. So first question, how we always like to start off is, you know, I like to ask everyone, just looking at the last year that we've seen, I know you and I have had some conversations about this off camera, but looking at the last year since the death of George Floyd, and then seeing how specifically the sporting world really put their hands up and led, I guess we could say, in this fight against social injustices and racism, at least starting in sports. How would you describe where we are at now? Do you feel like there has been quite a big improvement?
I think there has been an improvement, which obviously you can't say turn your nose up at, but I don't think it's been as big as maybe it could have been. I think at times throughout the year, it's felt like it's been a lot more, but you kind of feel like the energy is dying just a little bit because there's a sense of normality, which is going to be coming very, very soon with, you know, more of the world overcoming the pandemic. So you're going to have more people back involved in sports, in stadiums and things like this. And it has that sense of normality, which before the death of George Floyd wasn't a great normality for everybody. But we are drifting back towards that, where sports is the focus, as opposed to seeing sports and having sports allowing people a platform to be able to talk about bigger issues, because that's the thing, we have to call it what it is. Some of the social injustice and racism and so on is bigger than sport itself. But you try and have that conversation with somebody who's only obsessed with sport and they don't want to listen. But in this last year, they've had to listen. So I think it's been a very, very interesting year. I think as is the case with probably most Black people, I think from when the stuff started last year, we were in a place whereby we were now able to tell more of our stories and have more people listen. And there was, there was a greater sense of sympathy, not so much empathy, but greater sense of sympathy. And you think to yourself, well, this feels like the right thing to do now. But say for someone like me, you know, I'm not the oldest person in the world. I've not seen everything that has to be seen, but I'm 33 years old, 34 years old. And I'm thinking this is the first time in my life that I'm telling my stories. So it's strange because I think, well, why couldn't I have told them before? And the reason was, I don't think nobody wanted to listen. You could try and say, and literally nobody wanted to listen. You think to yourself, well, why was that the case? Why was that the case? But, you know, there's been a lot. I've received more support in the last year than I did for the previous 33 years of my life. And for as much as that's good, it's also alarming that that's how long it took to get to that moment. And it took something as egregious as, say, the murder of George Floyd, for people to be able to see that there's a different perspective in life other than just that of the majority. So yeah, I think overall, to go back to the question, I think, yeah, we are in a better position, but it still has a lot of work to go, because at times I feel like this fight is like pushing water uphill. Yes, you can, but you never do any great rate and you're continually being pushed backwards. And it's a shame because it seems objectively like it should be something which we can all solve together. But ultimately for some people, there's no interest in doing so.
Nidham, I understand exactly what you're saying. At times, it does feel like some of the momentum that we gained over the last year in telling those stories is starting to die a little bit. And part of that, and which has been in the headlines, you know, has been a topic of discussion within football, is the taking of the knee. You saw Wilfred Zaha come out and say he's not doing it any further. Before that, you had the likes of QPR saying that they won't as a team. You also saw the reaction at grounds like Millwall and Colchester when fans were allowed back in, albeit briefly. How do you see that as a symbol of where we are? And do we continue? If so, how long?
That's a good question. And you've opened up some sort of a Pandora's box for me and my opinions on certain of those issues, because I do have certain takes on certain things. So, for example, the social media blackout of this past weekend, I think it's a great show of unity But I don't think in the long term it changes what is essentially the mission statement for some of those social media platforms. But a show of unity in itself is something which is better than nothing. And I think there are lots of things in play which are better than nothing. As a consequence, I'm always more than happy to support it because I haven't come up with an alternative. And like I say, this is better than nothing. And with the nothing being like, you know, we're in a complete shambles. Great. Let's get behind it. And that's how I felt about the sort of kneeling situation, because if I was going to play for another 10 years, I'd kneel for every game for 10 years just to make sure that people knew what was going on, what I was essentially trying to bring to the light. But some people, they didn't want to do it. And for Wilfried Zaha, it's perfectly entitled to his opinion. And he said that maybe, you know, the message is being diluted and so on and so forth. But a diluted message is more than no message at all. So I thought to myself, well, if you're not going to do it, that's fair enough, but offer something else. Instead of being critical of the stuff which is being attempted, whether it's disingenuous or not, offer something else. And then you saying you're not going to kneel means that you're going to show something else, which again brings back the message, but instead he goes towards standing, which then puts other people in a position whereby they want to follow him. And before you know it, it's just a normal game. And I thought that, I don't know, it just felt a little bit misguided. But it's, you know, it's tough. Like to talk about another sort of case now, look to say all the conversations that existed around the Super League, and I've never seen so many people so unhappy in all my life. And that's because their identity was being questioned. This isn't what we believe in. This isn't right. What are you doing to us? How dare you do that to us? And so on and so forth. But with everybody coming out and say protesting, whether it was at stadiums or whatever, I never heard people say, well, I'm tired of this. Can you stop covering it? Because they want it to be heard every single day. But for us, we get to a point where, say, for example, I think it's Raheem Sterling was racially abused maybe 2 days after they won the Champions League. And that's a story that's in the news. But most people don't care anymore because it's like they've heard it before. They're not living it. So it's like, let's move on to the next. But when it was their own identity in terms of their football clubs or just the game of football in general, there's no end point to that until the thing stops. And look how quickly they're able to stop. So I think it's a shame because we do have lots of people who've recently come to sort of the side of making things better for everyone. But then there are lots of other people where ultimately, until it affects them on a day-to-day basis, they won't take it that seriously. And I think it's that lack of empathy which essentially puts us in a position where, you know, I'm hopeful that things will be better in the future. But I realize that every step that we take, yes, it's a step towards things being a lot better, but that journey itself is far longer than we should have ever hoped for. And that sounds incredibly pessimistic, but I think every day when we look around and we see how behaviors are, you can see that things aren't really changing that much because, you know, we're in a spot in the world where we even last year with the George Floyd stuff and so on, you feel like you're watching something which objectively is one way, but people are still, you're still being divided about those talking points and those topics. You're having the sort of kneeling issue. And someone saying, no, I don't like this, I don't like that. But then for me, being a foreigner in America, I was like, I couldn't vote, so it doesn't bother me either way. But it's within the Constitution to allow you to peacefully protest. That is literally the Constitution. So for somebody to believe that they believe in the Constitution, but then criticize you for using it yourself, I think, well, what can you do then? Because if you don't peacefully protest, you're criticized. And if you do peacefully protest, you're criticized. So does that mean they just don't want to say anything at all? Because an issue which they don't necessarily want to be a part of. But yeah, it's been really tough, I think, really taking it all in, because you realize, as I say, that we're not in a hopeless position, but the improvements are ever so little. But you know, in our lifetimes, if we can make it just that little bit better for the next generation, then maybe they can go on and so forth on that journey, even though it may be long. Maybe there is going to be an end point at some stage, but only if we continue doing the right things now.
And Adam as well, I mean, you definitely hit the nail on the head there, where you said it's something that I know Shaka and I probably experienced, where, you know, we don't want to get to the situation where people just get too tired of just hearing about this, because this is something that finally, as you said, we finally feel that we have more people's attention, or at least more people's, I suppose, empathy and whatnot as well, more so than before. More people are willing to check themselves, check how they use certain slangs or whatever that, you know, obviously have racist histories that they probably didn't know about that. And a lot of the onus, I suppose, seems to be placed on us. They look at, you know,
persons of color and say, okay, what do we do next? What do we do next? You know, and Shaq and I were talking to Troy Townsend just last week, and he says sometimes we're tired. We genuinely are tired because we all doing this and fighting for it too. It does take a lot of, you know, revisiting our own personal experiences and reopening certain wounds. But for you, knowing that you have as well your own podcast, you obviously were, you know, playing and you have so many good relationships with other players. What's been the feeling, I suppose, for them, the ones that you've spoken to, whether obviously on your podcast or off, about how maybe after the last year and seeing more people like Raheem Sterling, like Marcus Rashford, you know, like Kamar Roof as well, coming out and speaking harshly about the abuse that they, you know, receive, whether it's online or on the pitch. Whereas before, as you said, they probably didn't speak up about it like yourself because, you know, they thought, well, what good would it do? So how do you feel, or what have they told you about how they're dealing with it and what's changed in the last year?
I think ultimately I think discrimination and so on is still there, but for some people they're not ashamed to do it now, but they're wary that it becomes a bigger conversation if they do so. So some people will hold sort of prejudice against people and so on and so forth, but they're not going to be as out in the open as say maybe they were in the past. Like to talk about the say Instagram situation and Twitter situation from the weekend with the blackout, like even if change was brought to Instagram, Twitter, and so on and so forth, like that's great, but it doesn't necessarily change people's opinions about say minority groups and things like that.
Yeah,
which is like the bigger issue in itself, because in the same way, like for example, you know, everybody goes to school, but you don't really find lots of racist incidents and so on in school because that's not an environment where that type of thing is ever going to be spoken about or accepted. But then people seem to grow up to be adults and still have some of the views, but they maybe like felt those same views when they were in school, but that particular environment doesn't allow them to do it or to say it. So like, it's about changing reality. And I think in this moment, lots of people that I know, they are, whether they're black or white or whatever, they're calling more stuff out now.
Yeah,
and that's really, really good. I appreciate that. I think everybody appreciates that. Whether or not the person being called out will learn from it and change, I don't know, because it depends on their intent. But there are lots of times now where you say, well, you can't say it. You shouldn't say that. No, that's wrong. And it's not just a black person saying that to a white person. That could be a white person saying that to a white person based on conversations they've had with a black person. Like, I'm good friends with Jordan Henderson, and he was doing everything that he could last year to listen to the stories and get a real understanding of what was really going on. Like, he'd tell me about times when I think he was up in Sunderland, and one of his friends was telling him, like, they'd be in a supermarket together when they were younger. And his friend's being followed around the supermarket, but Jordan's not being followed around. And then he leaves the supermarket with his friend, but he never even realized that there was a security guard following his friend around. His friend didn't feel he had to talk about that because, like, you know, what's the conversation? Mm-hmm. So he realizes that, you know, perspective is a huge thing. What he's living isn't necessarily the way he's living isn't exactly the same as the next person, even though you assume it would be, because you can only see through your own eyes until somebody tells you about what they see themselves. So I think, as I say, more people with bigger platforms and more prominence and, you know, bigger voices, essentially, they are, as I say, starting to call things out just that little bit more, because they acknowledge that the world isn't what they thought it was. So they're trying to help make it as good as possible, make it better for as many people as possible. And it's, you know, it's good. And it's just overall, it's just this time so interesting, because it's a real learning experience. Like, obviously we don't want to see violence or this or that or whatever, but one thing which came from I think a police officer killed, I forget what her name was, I think it was Sarah Everard or something in England. One mm-hmm. thing came from that conversation was there were more women coming out and saying how uncomfortable they were about certain things, which as a male, like I think I'm a good supportive guy who tries to, you know, make the world good for everybody. But there were some women were saying things which I'd never thought about before. Mm-hmm. Of an evening, I might decide to go for a run without even thinking about it. Then all of a sudden I realized after that death that lots of women in my life don't even consider going for a run at nighttime, but they're not coming mm-hmm. to me saying I can't go for a run at night.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel unsafe. They just don't do it. But you really, all of a sudden you realize why certain things are happening or not happening. You think, yeah. Wow. And I've been none the wiser about this. So I think ultimately, as I say, there's some people losing life who really don't need to lose life, people being discriminated against who really don't need it. But we're learning some lessons. And I think lots mm-hmm. of people I orbit are learning those lessons as well. And as a consequence, they do step out into the world with a different set of eyes on them. And they're doing everything they can because, you know, there are lots of good people out there who are trying to make a difference. And slowly but surely, more and more people are coming towards that side. But there's still a ton of other people on the other side who don't have the empathy. And as a consequence, they're not really fussed because the worst thing in the world could happen to somebody tomorrow. But if it doesn't happen to them, then...
not their problem.
Exactly. Why should they care?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Over the last 12 months, I've kind of found myself, as much as, you know, we've been discussing and I've been talking about racism, how it exists in our game and in our society, I think the wider call has been about equality. And I have also been reflecting on maybe my own role through ignorance in gender-based violence and how that affects women in today's society. So it has given us time to pause and reflect on so much, not just in some of the fights that we've been involved with for a long time, some of the stories we've been telling for a long time, but those that maybe we have failed to recognize.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Joan Henderson, and let me just say for the record, I think he's an incredible person. Like I never met him, don't know him, but everything about him just screams class and quality and an understanding that goes beyond maybe beyond who you think he is. And I say that in particular in hearing how he reflected on Liverpool's handling of the Luis Suarez Patrice Evra incident, how he was reflective of his own role and the role that so many in the team played. And I think that's a real measure of who we are today, recognizing some of our behaviors, though innocent at the time, how they play into a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. That being said, though, here on the conversation, we've spoken to players from as far back as Luther Blissett, mm-hmm. and hearing his own experiences as a young Black teenager coming over from Jamaica and playing football in the 80s as he did, and his experiences. And contrasting it to today, where you see the likes of Raheem Sterling and Marcus Rashford speaking out and standing up as they have. I would love to hear you articulate how you see the role of today's footballers and how what has gone on in the 30 or 40 years previous has led us to them having the platform that they have today.
So to talk about way back when with Luther Blissett and so on, I think the stuff that they had to go through, we're very, very grateful that players today don't have to do that. Very, very grateful for that fact. Obviously, they should never have had to go through that. But today, it's better from that standpoint because it's kind of like I was saying before in terms of environment, not allowing people to be able to say it. You know, even for like decades now, it's been saying if you hear any abuse or this, that, and the other, call the number and so on and so forth. Instead of in theory, they've been trying to make that a place where that doesn't happen. Doesn't necessarily mean people inside don't have those views, but they just don't shout them out as often. So, you know, great, safer environment, whatever. But as time's passed, like I'm always wary of sounding like, you know, at times like a grumpy old pro or a grumpy old ex-pro and stuff like that, because the game has changed so, so much. But the thing is, so is life. I think I got my first color phone in 2002, 2003. And I'm like, okay, so that really wasn't that long ago. Social media, I remember I joined Instagram in 2012. It's really not that long ago. If you would have told me 9 years ago, Instagram's going to be the biggest thing in the world, I'd be like, okay, good one. But still, here we are, and it is. And for those players, I think the biggest difference between, say, from Luther's day to this day now is that back in the day, Luther would have been accessible to the people in the stadium or people in the city who he represents through that team. Whereas the players now, your number one fan need not even be in the same city as you. They could be on the other side of the world and you're accessible because of things like social media. So for when you play and when you don't play, you're always accessible. And with that comes with a different sense of sort of pressure, a different set of expectations, you know, stuff which I didn't have when I was younger. Like when I was Raheem Sterling's age, I think, I don't even know if MySpace was a thing. So, you know, I might have been in like AOL chat rooms or whatever.
The good old days.
But yes, it was a completely different time. And these guys here now, you know, they have huge platforms. You can have kids now who haven't played a first team game yet, who've got tens of thousands of followers on social media, but nobody's ever seen them play. They've just heard about them, but they all know them. So every action that you take is being analyzed now in the same way that in the past, it would only be analyzed if you were in the stadium once every 2 weeks to go and watch your team. And those players now, they take that responsibility on their shoulders. And for them to be able to do what they've done in terms of calling out things which are wrong and aren't for the greater good, for me, is truly, I find that truly incredible, because on that sort, they have their own pressures anyway, but they still find time to understand what is more important in life. Like, they're at the pinnacle of football. They're playing for some of the biggest clubs in the world, playing for the national team, trying to win everything. They're endorsed by this company, that company, what, and all this. And they're like, so what? For me, this matters more. And to have that platform and for them to step up and do that, because it's very, very easy within football to just be anonymous. It's so, so easy to be anonymous because there's so many of us that do it. But when those guys are willing to basically risk everything on their platform, because people will disagree with them. But when they're prepared to risk everything for something which doesn't necessarily even benefit themselves, but benefits the people coming after them, that is truly, truly incredible. And I think people from way back when, if they had these same sort of opportunities, maybe they would have done. But then again, the other side of that coin, you have that big platform. And say, I use this as an example. If 1% of people really don't like you, that's fine when 100 people follow you. What happens when it's 100,000? What happens when it's that's a lot of people who can come to you every single day and you're accessible 24/7. But those guys, they try and rise above it and they try and do everything they can to try and help the greater good and make things more equal for everybody. And for me, like, that's so, so impressive, because as I say, within football, it's very easy to be anonymous, but the ones with the biggest platforms trying to make the biggest difference, they deserve all the credit in the world. And this goes, I couldn't care less if they're playing well or playing badly. For me, those are just standout human beings. And you know, that's why I always support them.
And then Nadab, I mean, back to the point where you had said that obviously you have had your fair share, I'm sure, of you know, horrible experience as well, whether in the game or just, you know, growing up in society that we know has been plagued by racism from day one, pretty much. How in the last year, I guess, and seeing the likes of, like you said, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, you know, stepping up as well, using their platform, how have you, I guess, changed, or has your way of fighting it in your own way, has it changed that much, or have you tried to change it to probably, I suppose, suit what's going on today better?
So I'm in somewhat of a sticky situation, because my social media stuff is closed. It's all private.
Yeah.
My voice goes as far as the people who follow me already. And to be honest, most of the people that follow me already are people I can vouch for. But it means that I'm always front foot, especially being on the other side of the game now, being in the media. I will happily share my voice about absolutely everything that matters. And I'll be very, very honest about it. I don't shy away from it. I don't say I'd rather not. You can listen. Give me 24 hours where we can talk specifically about, say, injustice, discrimination, whatever, whether it's against people of a certain faith, people of a certain sex, certain religion, whatever. Like, I'll do it because I know this matters. I don't know how far my voice will go, but we have to call things out for what they are. And I'm more than happy to do so. And like I said before, it's very, very easy to be anonymous, but I choose not to be in times which need the most discussion and need the more honest opinion. But something I'm sure that you guys have felt as well, which annoys me, is being somebody in a minority as such. Whenever you want to make a case, you've got to deliver a message in a certain manner. The sort of the tough tone that most fans who were trying to protest last week for the Super League were able to deliver is something which I've never felt I've been able to deliver. Because very quickly you could turn into the trope of just the angry black man. And who wants to support you when you're being like that? So I've always got to be very, very careful about my words to the point where I don't upset people who might want to jump ship and disregard us already, even though this is about my life and lives like my own, which matter the most to me. And I'll be honest, that I kind of hate that, but I understand that's what you have to do sometimes to continue, as we've seen here, the conversation. Because you know yourself, if you shout something out at people, even if it's right, not everybody wants to listen. And that's ultimately, you know, a shame, because this, you can be very, very passionate about something, very, very passionate, but you still have to talk in a calm manner and try and include everybody. Like, yes, I understand why. Maybe someone might not understand why we're kneeling and this, that, and the other. But I really want to say, we kneel because of this, and this is wrong. But you can't, you know, you can't do that. So yeah, in terms of me and just my standing, as I say, coming into doing more full-time media at the time that I have has been invaluable for me, because it's meant that, say, my voice goes beyond just people who follow me on Instagram or see me in real life. Mm. And that stuff really, really matters more than anything. Like, I would stop everything I could do in a minute if it meant that, say, I could help more people and help us get closer towards equality. And, you know, obviously we're not at that particular moment yet, but I'm not going to, throughout my life, I've not chosen to be anonymous, but I can guarantee you for a fact now, anytime there's a call and somebody needs to speak, I guarantee you I'll be there.
Let me ask this, Nedim. Given everything we've endured, given all that we've seen in the way the game has approached equality and the calling of this moment, what does success look like?
That's a really, really good question. That's a really good question. I think you could probably split up into short, medium, and long term. I think in the short term, guaranteeing that the environment we're in now, whereby things can be spoken about for what they are and people not dance around it, that needs to continue. Secondly, I think probably in the medium term, people have to really not just listen to the stories, but understand the stories, because those stories themselves need to be shared by not just Black people, but other people saying, you know, this is why we're doing this. I feel like I want to be in a world where a man could talk to another man about women's rights in the same way a white person could talk to another white person about, say, the rights of minorities and so on and so forth. And for it to roll off their tongue because they fully understand, and for the conversations to be had between the majority in that sense, and it not be one of those where, like, it's whatever. Like, we don't joke about Black people because in a group of white people because they're not here. We don't joke about women because we're a bunch of men or whatever. I feel that's the medium term goal. And then the long term goal is probably to a point whereby, like, if we look at society in general, the majority of people believe in equality instead of it being, and believe in it wholeheartedly, and not just a case of whereby there's a group of people who are seeking it, and sometimes fair weather followers come and make you closer to a majority. But then when you're out and there's no pandemic, you drift back to being what it was. I think that would be the ultimate goal, to sort of change society to the point where, as I say, more people do want the best for everyone. And even though, you know, there'll still be groups of people who don't, they'll be marginalized. So as a consequence, some of those views won't matter. But yeah, in the last year in England, to be seeing games kicking off and you see a sign whereby, or they'll say, they're doing this for equality. They're doing that for equality. I want that energy to remain when there's 30,000 people in the stands. I want that energy, you know what I mean? And it's been, as much as I'm happy with what's happened in the last year, I'm also thinking to myself, it's been a lot easier because nobody's been there. Literally nobody's been there. If they keep these measures in play for the next season when every stadium's full, then I know they're taking it seriously, because then, as I said, they're showing to everyone that they're with it. And that's, yeah, for me, I think that's what success would be change that would happen over time. But it starts, as I say, with a consistency level from now, which then leads to sort of an educational point whereby, you know, it's not just the minorities or the, you know, whether it's women or whoever who are having to make their own case. Other people can make it for you with as much passion as you would do yourself, because they understand what it is to be who you are.
That's a wrap for this edition of The Conversation. But trust me, we're going to keep this conversation going. Look out for a new episode coming your way very soon.